Welcome to this meeting of the Scrutiny Commission for Charlwood Borough Council. There are a number of things I would like to remind people of before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following the meeting. Under the openness of local government bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent and ensure that your environment is distraction free. Thank you. This meeting of the Scrutiny Commission is being held as a hybrid meeting with some participants joining the meeting virtually. I will now ask those members if they can see and hear the meeting. So we've got Councillor Nat Taylor. Can you see and hear the meeting? I'll come back to him in a moment. Councillor Hamilton, I can see you.
Thank you, Chair. I can confirm I can both see and hear proceedings.
And Katie Mills, we've got with us.
Thank you, Chair. I can confirm I can both hear and see the meeting.
Okay. Oh, and Councillor Nat Taylor.
I can hear you now.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, brilliant.
That's everyone, isn't it?
Katie Moore from local planting.
Katie Mills there, sorry. She's there, covered.
Yeah. Was she online?
No, it's just Katie, it's Katie Mills.
Katie Moore on the script as well.
I think it's
Karen Moore, but I don't know if she's coming. I don't think she is she? Karen Moore?
No, yeah. That's right. Thank you. Okay, if we move on to item one, apologies. Have we got any apologies, Sally?
No apologies, Chair.
Thank you. Item two is minutes of the previous meeting. Is everyone happy with the minutes from the previous meeting? Yep, lovely.
Yeah.
I will get those signed at the end of the meeting. Item three is disclosures of pecuniary interests and other registrable and non-registrable interests. Have we got any this evening? No, thank you.
Oh, I don't have to say I'm on the planning committee, do I?
I don't think
so. No.
Item four is decorations of the party whip. We've got any, but just check. No, thank you. And item five is questions under scrutiny committee procedures 11.16. We've not had any questions submitted this evening. Item six is pre-decision scrutiny of any specific financial matters to be considered by Cabinet, and we've not got any items of this nature tonight. Item seven is Cabinet items pre-decision scrutiny. So the following items have been identified for a pre-decision scrutiny from the Cabinet agenda for the 12th of December 2024. So item 7A is car parking fees. So we've got Councillor Blackshaw here with us. If you'd like to introduce the item, please.
Thank you, Chair. It was back in August that we came to you with the first set of fees. We've carried out a full consultation and we've come back with a revised set of fees responding to the feedback that was given to us by people such as the bowling club users and the BID and general members of the public. So I'm going to hand over to Kerry and Lee and Carl to go through the details of it.
Okay, thank you. So as advised, previously we bought some fees and as part of those requirements to change those, there was a consultation that was required. We went out to the public via multiple channels to be able to gather some further feedback on those fees. So that was from the 24th of September through to the 20th of October. We received just under 1,000 consultation responses, which were all reviewed by Carl and the team in order to have a look at what customers were saying about some of those proposals. We managed to split those into a number of areas where there were key themes that came out, which we've obviously covered within in the response. There was particularly some feedback around the evening charges, around the Sunday charges, and also those of the leisure centre user and also the bowls club as well, where there was some particular feedback. So on looking at those responses, we then obviously looked at what the possible options were to be able to address some of those consultation comments to see if we could positively address those within the fee structure and the reasons we were looking at the fees, and obviously we've discussed those as well with cabinet members at a briefing to look at what the feedback would be as well from cabinet. What we've come forward with is some amended proposals where we have looked at firstly the evenings. So we have put in some revised fees for the evenings where we've changed those to a fee of £1 for 1 hour and £2 for over 1 hour. We also looked at the Sundays, where we've looked at a daytime rate for Sundays only of 50% of those proposed new 24-hour charges to take into consideration the usage of the car parks on the Sundays and those events that were held and the possible impact on those as well. And then we also looked at the leisure centre users and, as I say, the Bowls Club, because that's all of those Brand Lane car park, and where we looked to actually keep the existing charge level but extend those over the full period of time that the leisure centre is open, to reflect obviously a consistent charging pattern through day and night for those. There is an implication in terms of finances of making those changes. Again, it's noted in the report that that would bring down the proposed additional income from £180,000 to £135,000, which obviously would then be considered within the budget proposals for the forthcoming year. But I think what we've managed to do is find a balance between what our customers are saying that's important to them, and also that need as an organisation to maximise our income across car parks and minimise losses, which then obviously can have a detrimental effect on other services, which would we have to support that gap. So I think as an officer team, we're comfortable in terms of those new proposals, that we can be seen to obviously listen to our residents while offering also value for money and the investment that we need in the car parks. So I think, unless there's anything further you want to add, I'm happy obviously to answer any questions at all.
Lovely, thank you. I've just got a few comments and questions of clarity, really. But thank you for that, it was really thorough. The main thing I guess I want to say is I'm really pleased you went for the consultation. I think given how many people have taken part in the consultation really shows the value and the need for it. So I'm really pleased that the public got behind the consultation, and actually sometimes you do a consultation and people have their own private view, but then they don't actually submit it, and you can't take a view of that when you're making decisions. So I think the fact that so many people had their say was great. I'm also pleased to see that we've made some changes to the proposal based on the feedback from the consultation. That was one of the things that I think kind of we as the committee were most concerned about with the proposal that came through. First of all, that we just weren't sure the consultation would be as substantial as it needed to be. So I'm really pleased that we've done that, and I think that the work that's come out of that has made a big difference. So I've just got some questions of clarity, if that's okay. So with regards to the leisure centre, so previously there was a free period, was it in the day, and then there was charges at night. This is for leisure centre users rather than non-leisure centre users, and now we're charging throughout the day but at the lower rate that it was before. Is that correct?
It's the other way around.
Okay. So
it was free in the evening.
That was it, yeah. And so now there's the charge
in the evening. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So we've lost the free period completely.
Yes.
Okay. Second question on that. There's still potential, I think, with the leisure centre to lose members, with there being not an option for there to be any free usage of the car park. Have we got a mechanism to review cancellations over the next 6 months so that we can just monitor what's going on there? Because I think it would be good to know if people are cancelling and moving elsewhere, that we get that feedback so that we can make decisions or changes going forward if we suddenly see a drop off in membership.
So we haven't put that in place yet, but we can certainly liaise with Matthew Bradford, obviously, who's responsible in terms of the contract with Fusion, to look at that.
Just like an exit survey or something. Someone does a cancellation, we send them an exit survey to say, we may do that already, I don't know. Can you let us know why you've decided to cancel?
So I think it's important when we put anything new in anyway, it's always important to review that to see how it's working and the impact that it's having, one in terms of income, but also if there is a negative impact. That's certainly quite a significant point of discussion that we had before coming to these proposals around the impact on the leisure centre. We did engage with Fusion at the time, and actually they didn't give us any cause for concern about those charges being changed, but I'm quite happy to take an action to go back to Matt Bradford and ask if there's something we can do to see if there is any direct correlation with complaints in the coming 6 months.
Yeah.
To see if then we do need to, I mean, going forward, generally the fee changes is an officer delegated decision, so if we needed to make a change to that, then that would probably be an easier process if there was a need to do that in the future. But yeah, we can take an action to have a look at that.
Lovely, thank you. With regards to Granby Street, so we have stuck with the decision of having the higher rate for the longer period, so essentially turning it into a long stay car park rather than short stay car park. That was the strategy, wasn't it?
The other way around. Keeping it a short stay car park and avoiding long term use, that's right.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, just got the wording round the wrong way. But we're wording it that way. Are we going to put that on the signage?
That we want it to be a short stay.
That we're calling it short stay. So then someone comes, when they see the charges and they see that it's high if they stay, most people understand the principle of a short stay, long stay. Just having it on the actual sign, I think, might help.
Sure. For the sake of our staff, though, I'll be putting lots of signs up so people know about it, because it'll be the wardens who are the first point of call for comments and whatever. So yeah, that was a proposal to put lots of signage up.
Thank you. Do we have a different rate for market traders in that car park?
No, not at this time.
Okay. And then one more, and then that is me done, which is we said that we're going to review it going forward. So review of fees will be carried out biannually with increases based on inflation. Why have we picked biannually when inflation is usually done on a year-on-year basis?
Because it's a car park, and some of the fees are, if you go up by 5% or whatever, it's only 5p or so it has to go up by 10p, and 10p on a pound or something is 10%. So it's more because we're using machines and coinage, and we don't want a 5p or a 7p or whatever. So that it biannually was appropriate when inflation was low a few years ago, but.
Okay, so we're saying that it wouldn't, not everything would necessarily go up, but it would get reviewed then, and some things might go up the 5-10p, but then it might not go up the next time and another rate might go up.
I don't think that's what we're saying. I think we were concerned that depending on the rate of inflation, if we looked at it every year, we would have to then be making it possibly more than inflation. So if it was only going to go up by 3p, we really need, because of the car parking machines and the software, for it to be a 10p rise. And so it's more likely that that would match every 2 years as opposed to every year. So because otherwise, if we did it every year and say, for example, it's going to go up by 4p, if we then put it by 10p, you can imagine the headlines would be
that's what 25%.
Whereas we felt if it was then every other year,
yeah,
then it would be more realistic and it would be probably closer to the 10p, and that would be
more in line with inflation. Thank you.
If I may, Chair, thank you. Just firstly, I want to just say thank you to all the officers involved in the consultation, for all your work on it. Reviewing almost 1,000 responses to a car parking survey is no small undertaking. So much appreciated. Thank you for taking it seriously and giving everyone their say. And also thanks to Cabinet for considering it and for reviewing the charges. A lot of the feedback from people is similar to what we're saying at the scrutiny meeting, and I think this has panned out really, really well as a happy compromise. No one was ever saying that the fees don't need to go up, but I think this is a really good and really reasonable sort of middle ground. So really happy to see it. Great. A couple of things just to clarify. I mean, we've kind of already gone over, I was going to ask about increases and how often they're reviewed, but I think we've pretty much covered that. Would there be any reason outside of that biannual period where we might decide to make a change up or down if something happened? Or
I think what we'd have to say is we'd have to be open to that. So if, for example, we found there was, a significant issue with one of the car parks that was going to mean a huge amount of capital was needed or additionally, we might need to think about that. As I said, there is delegated authority for Lee as the head of regulatory services to look at that, but I don't think we would do that without very good reason to do that. I think that's why we've put it in here about wanting to look at that on a biannual basis, because that then gives us obviously that mechanism for doing that regularly and not being in the position where it's such a huge change. So I don't want to never say never.
Yeah.
I think if there was something significant that meant we needed to consider that, then obviously, but we'd come back, I think, actually, and obviously talk to members about that and the reasoning, etc. So
Brilliant. All right, that's great. Thank you.
Councillor Harbour Davis.
Thank you. I've got a thank you too. I think you've done a great job. It's super to see a really good, effective consultation process, and followed by the really listening to the stakeholders. And I just think it seems to be very thorough, and to get near just under 1,000 consultees and response, that's just fantastic. So just a thank you from me. Thank you.
Councillor Seaton.
Thank you. Yes, thank you as well for listening and coming up with alterations. I just want to know how you'll manage the leisure facility one, how that will be managed. Is it a card? I don't use the leisure centre. I don't park at the car park, so I don't know what you do at the moment. So if I'm a member of the leisure centre, do I have a card that... how will you manage that?
It's pain display in the daytime. So there's an option on the pain display machines to say whether you're a leisure user or a non-leisure user.
So what about the liars?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. That's an honesty policy.
There's a balance between...
You're not like an honest cop.
There's a balance between practicality and a little bit of deceit or whatever. Before we had that option on the pain display machine, people had to go into the leisure centre, purchase a ticket and come back out again. So there was parents turning up with children at 4 o'clock, queuing to go to reception to get a ticket, to come back to the car, to queue back up at the leisure centre. So it was accepted that there may be some risk in that, but it's a 2-hour stay maximum, so it's fairly minimal. I think in the future we can look at technology that can improve that process with some of the technology that's about now that wasn't about a few years ago. So yes, they call it ullage in the beer trade, don't they? There's a little bit of waste and a little bit of that. But I honestly don't think it's a big issue.
Big issue, isn't it? Thank you.
Councillor Needham.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to echo what Councillor Rattray said about the signage, particularly on Granby Street, and about how clear it is. The Sunday bit particularly, I'm not 100% confident how easy that is to understand if you're quickly trying to go in a car park and skim read it. So if you are thinking about signage, maybe just think about, is that bit easy to understand, because I didn't at first. And the other question I had that hadn't been covered was what you were talking about, Kerry, about the financial implications. I think a lot of the revenue that was going to be generated by this was going to go back into investment in the car parks. If you are not if you're only getting 75% of what you expected to get when you were drawing this up, is that going to have a huge impact on what you're able to do?
We're not anticipating it's going to have a huge impact. As I say, what we're doing is working through the budget process now to look at that availability and what that means. We've had to do a compromise, and so, really within our financial budgets, that's something we're going to have to consider. But I think if we had, continued down the route we were and we'd had all of these responses, we would not have been seen as a very customer-focused council. So I think, that is a consideration of the changes that we've made, but in terms of, we have got some improvements we want to make. We have already got some capital money in the pot right now, so this will further enhance it, but we'll just consider that really going forward, and maybe some things we need to do at a later stage as we go forward. I think one of the positive things that we have seen is that the car park income has nearly returned back now to pre-pandemic levels, which wasn't actually the case when we had the original report done. So we've seen a further increase to actually offset some of that income we're seeing, more than we had originally anticipated.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Seaton.
Thank you. God, it's just disappeared out of there. Hold on, let it rewind a little bit. It's disappeared, gone completely.
I get that all.
Sorry.
Too late now.
Goodness sake.
Shall I go to Councillor Taylor?
No.
Oh, you go.
Lessons learned, because 1,000 responses was very, very good result. And for a lot of consultations you do on other matters, I bet you only dream of getting 1,000 responses. So was there any lesson learned from this? Did we, was it advertised anywhere? Did it go to specific groups that we could probably harness later with different consultations? if we get consultations online, do we keep the people's contact details so that they're obviously the sort of type of person that will respond to a consultation, so we could probably email them next time we were having a consultation, knowing or being more confident that they would reply to a consultation.
So I think actually we were pleasantly surprised by the amount of responses. I think the comms team did a really good job of promoting that, along with the bid as well. Federation of Small Business, you know, got that message out there that it was there. So I think that's why, I think it was through our comms team, as I say, through those other local organisations that supported that. Yes, we do have a record, because actually for everybody that consulted, we do have to formally go back as part of this process and respond to them. So we tell them what is you know, the outcome in terms of what they've put in. In terms of using them for next time, that will all depend on privacy and data protection. We're only obviously allowed to use as people's details for certain purposes. So in terms of if we wanted to go back and consult on car parks, we would be able to do that. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't necessarily be able to use their details for any wide-ranging topic unless they've given us permission to do so.
Is there a mechanism where you could ask that question prior, sort of a tick box, and say, would you... would it be okay if we use your contact details for future?
Yes, we often do that, because they then have to have an option to be able to unsubscribe. So like on when you go on a website, you get that box at the front, so you know, people can ask to do that. So again, where we're doing activities like that, we can ask that question as part of the consultation, and if they say yes, we keep their details on record, and if they say no, obviously they have a right to the bottom, we take that. So yeah, I think, you know, personally, I think actually it went really well in terms of the way that we got the feedback through the different methods. You know, we saw with the Bowls Club, they wanted to do it by paper, we were able to accept it in a, you know, that different way. Vast majority were online, but I think we showed that, you know, we had some people that came into the office as well, so people did use a variety of channels.
A lot of them were already subscribed, because that's how Mike from comms got them. He sent out direct email correspondence, so it was through the comms process that he captured a lot of the customers anyway, so they are on file anyway.
Is there any way to sort of work the, because it was such a good response, is there any way to find the percentage of those that were old hats that have responded before, and any new ones?
I would have thought we'd be able to, because of the email group that Mike has got that for consultation and other engagement purposes, we probably would be able to cross-reference to see how many came directly from there. We've got an awful lot of data actually about those individuals that responded because of the questions that were asked. So, that, you know, there would be opportunity to do some further analysis to see how many were new, you know, people that newly were engaging, and whether it was specifically about this topic. So that's certainly something, if, you know, we felt there was a benefit to do that, we could speak to Mike about.
Because obviously targeting groups, like you did with the Bowls group and things like that. So if you were doing something on Syston, say, and I didn't say Thurmaston, Syston, you could, obviously targeting and the knowledge of what's going on in certain areas. Yeah. So that is something probably the councillors could get, you know, if there was a consultation in a particular area, consult with the councillors to see what, you know, what community facilities are going on at the time or something
It's a lot. We have previously done a lot of work on customer insights. When we did our customer service strategy, we have we used to have a tool where we could look at all sorts of information around customers and grouping and how best to target groups and, you know, different types of groups. So, and I think it's something we've recently spoken about again around customer insight and how we can utilise that to the best ability with the data that we have, because we hold so much data. But definitely, I think, you know, those comments that you've made, we can take on board and make sure that, you know, we know what's available to people for future sort of engagement and consultation with customers.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions here? No? Councillor Taylor, is there anything you want to say on this item?
No, I think it's a lot better than it was. I think it's clear that, you know, we've listened, and I think we're almost in the happy medium, I think it's fair to say. Mm-hmm. You know, time will tell, obviously, but I think it's 10 times better than it was.
Thank you. Okay, should we go to a vote on the recommendation?
Support the recommendation.
Is everyone happy to support it as it is in the report today?
Yep.
Lovely. That's great, thank you.
You lost the ball.
Yes!
And if you don't make it, time to get you to
I'm not going to go.
Okay, so we've got item 7B, which is the local development scheme. So, Councillor Hamilton, I will go to in a second to introduce. We've got Rob Mitchell staying with us, Richard Bennett is just joining us now, and we've got Katie Mills on the screen with us.
Is everybody?
Yes. Councillor Hamilton, if you want to introduce, thank you.
Right, thank you, Chair. A very brief introduction. So, bottom line, this is page 21 to page 50 on your papers. So, a local development scheme, this is a statutory document, we need to have one, and it basically lays out the programme for the production of the Charlwood local plan. So, I think the last one was approved, the last version was approved in April this year. So this is a revised version. So, it covers things like the local plan examination process. I think to note actually that Charlwood is in control of the timetable here, as the planning inspector is. It also includes the details of the supplementary planning documents and the design code, and this new thing called, which no doubt will be hearing a lot in the coming months, the community infrastructure levy. Now, this is required to collect developer contributions to support the infrastructure identified in the draft local plan. So it's something that we need to have. There's kind of quite a long tale of how we got here, but you know, basically I think county put together a draft transport contribution strategy, which consulted in the summer, and I think basically they were advised that that it wasn't quite, it was challengeable, shall we say, and so Charlwood has come up with this approach. So my understanding is that the county has withdrawn that draft transport contribution strategy, and hopefully they will work with us to progress this SIL, as they kind of summer research, as they call it, so that we can then have a mechanism to get the monies in required to pay for the infrastructure required to deliver the draft local plan. Well, that's basically it.
Thank you. Richard, is there anything you want to add?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure I can say much more to what Councillor Hamilton's just laid out, though. He has summarised the situation very well. So the decision we're asking Cabinet to make is to prepare a community infrastructure levy as a formal document to support the delivery of the local plan going forward. And to do that, we need to amend the programme for the local plan, which is called the Local Development Scheme. So, it's a two-part report, really. One part, can we do a community infrastructure levy? And second part, here's the programme for it and the consequential changes that need to be made to bring forward not just the local plan, but also the supplementary planning documents, which also support the local plan going forward. So there is some background, which Councillor Hamilton has touched on there in his introduction, as to why we are where we are. So that's the report, Chair.
Thank you. I've just got two quick questions.
Sure.
One is in relation, well, I guess I'll start with the other one. Is it on every single development, whether it's one single house up to 1,000 houses, or is there a minimum size that it would get applied to?
So a community infrastructure levy will apply to all forms of development that were in the scope of the community infrastructure levy. We can decide as an authority what's in, what's out. My understanding is it applies to all developments. So if you're building one house, it would apply to that upwards.
Yes.
I think that's right. Am I right?
Sorry,
self-build
is exempt from SIL.
And the second question was that within the report there was a section saying that a certain percentage could be passed down to the parish and town councils if the development was in the boundary.
That's right, yeah.
How would that work, and would there be specifics as to what they could spend that funding on?
So as part of the process of bringing forward the SIL, we would have to devise the governance arrangements for the parish and town councils to draw down that funding. So We are seeking some specific advice on whether they have parish and town councils have to maintain their own infrastructure list and then draw down funding to deliver those things on their list, or whether it can be a little bit more open and flexible. So that's a detail we've not got into yet.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Eden.
Hello. Can I come in on that specific one, which wasn't a question until you asked it? So, for example, on that list, I expect some of those things would need sign-off from other agencies. So, for example, if we had a parish that really wanted, say, a crossing put in somewhere, that's still going to need kind of okaying by the Highways Authority, yeah. Isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Yes. Yeah. So it doesn't circumvent the normal approval process.
Right, so it would still fit within that. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for that. On the page 25, I just want to just make sure it's really clear. When the TCS was sort of challenged under law, that was by the development industry, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't us. It was the development industry. But then we took advice because of that challenge.
Yeah, so basically, the County Council published their draft transport contributions strategy in July. And towards the end of that consultation, the development industry started submitting their representations, and a group of developers submitted legal opinion from council, which said that the approach the county was taking was unlawful. The Borough Council took its own advice in light of that, and that concurred with that.
Right. Okay, thank you for that, Richard. Am I allowed to ask a couple more? Thank you. So in that vein, a lot of this seems to sort of local plan, you know, being found sound and stuff, seems to hinge on whether or not the inspector thinks that SIL approach will contribute to the viability of developments. Would that be right?
So already through the local plan process, the inspector has considered the infrastructure that's needed to develop and bring forward the plan. So that was all tested in hearings back in February of this year. The County Council set out some modifications to the infrastructure policies in the plan to help refine them, the approach that would be taken. But essentially, the delivery mechanism for infrastructure was going to be under the usual approach that we've been using in Charnwood for the last 30 years, which is under Section 106 of the Planning Act and legal agreements. That's worked well for us in the past. So in considering the mechanism and the viability of the plan, the inspector has tested the viability of the plan, looked at all the infrastructure required and tested it, you know, looked at the maths, and recognises that there isn't enough value in the local plan and the sites in there to bring forward infrastructure without an element of public subsidy. So that was discussed at the hearings back in February. So as we go forward in time, we're no longer going to be using Section 106 for strategic level infrastructure. We'll continue to use it for all other forms of infrastructure like doctor surgeries and open space and police contributions and that sort of thing. But we'll be using the community infrastructure levy, a roof tax, if you like, to bring forward the funding for this high level strategic infrastructure. So the inspector needs to test the viability evidence again in light of using SIL as the delivery mechanism, because as we've just discussed, the receipts for SIL, a proportion of it goes to parish and town councils. So you know, that's sort of a top slice off the amount of money that you bring in. So the inspector needs to have a look at that and see if that that vehicle is fit for purpose.
Okay. Do you feel like that this is that it is fit for purpose, that it would be the best strategy to take forward? Because I know that we do get pushback on development and things like that, but in my experience, it's not that people don't recognise the need for housing.
Yeah.
It's just frustration that the infrastructure doesn't keep up with it. And that certainly has been the case in my neck of the woods for a while. So are you confident that this will long term address those issues that we've got about that wider strategic
infrastructure? So we need to keep our mind on what you just said, that long term, because neither Section 106 or Community Infrastructure Levy will bring you a doctor's surgery tomorrow. You know, it takes time. You bring, you know, the development has to come forward and you know people need to start living on a site before actually there needs to be a new school or there needs to be a a piece of open space provided. You have to think about the development cycle and when things are actually needed in time. So if you look at the legal agreement for something like the Thurmaston SUE, the trigger points throughout the rollout of that development are set out at what point pieces of infrastructure are necessary and need to be in place. So and that's it's really important that things come forward. There's no point putting a school in when there are no resident, no pupils to occupy, if you see what I mean. So over time, Section 106 and Community Infrastructure Levy will garner the receipts that are necessary to deliver the infrastructure that's needed at the right point in time in that development rollout. That's the key thing.
Okay. Chippy, sir.
Yeah, so just a couple of points in addition. I think it is the right way forward for the reasons Rich has outlined. It's also broadly the only way forward given the circumstances that we're in, unless we take sort of more difficult options to, you know, withdraw the local plan. So I think we need to bear that in mind. The other point I wanted to make is a more general one, really, which is that we've got infrastructure capacity problems at junctions, in hospitals, elsewhere, and there's a lot of pressure on Section 106 or SIL to fill some of that gap. And actually what I think government needs to recognise of any colour is that there is need for genuine infrastructure investment on a whole range of different areas, power, drainage, water, everything, because we are adding housing here and everywhere else in the country to infrastructure that's already overloaded. So the cost of then unlocking new housing development gets put on the developers, but they can only pay their proportionate price, which means you get a gap. So I think, Richard, what was the cost originally in this for some of the highway stuff? 50 million?
So for this high-level, plan-level strategic transport infrastructure, when we submitted the plan, the cost was in the order of 55 million. And it's now at 200 million. And I think what we need to be very clear about is how much of that arises from the development itself and how much of it is an existing problem.
Yeah, that was going to be sort of my second half of that first question, was obviously the development industry challenged the County Council's strategy.
Yeah.
Is it, in your opinion, likely that they'll challenge this or that not?
The thing about a formal SIL process is it provides an opportunity for anybody to submit representations and to engage in the formal process, and for the evidence and the representations that have been submitted to be formally examined by an inspector, to have that opportunity in public, in public session, to test the evidence and the views that people are making. So at the end of the day, it could be an independent decision of a planning inspector.
Right, okay, that's so really helpful.
I think there is the risk that they will try and challenge it, but I think the difference potentially between this approach and the one that the County Council took is that this is part of a recognised process, which the county's process wasn't. I think it was trying to almost adopt a SIL, but without going through the process.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what they were found out about, to be honest. So I think that's why we've ended up here. I think the issue for the county still remains that, you know, having now put forward that they need 200 million, they've got to find the evidence to support that and justify which bits directly relate to the houses in the local plan. And until they can show how the houses that were put forward in the local plan directly relate to their 200 million need, they won't be able to draw down Section 106. So that's what we've been encouraging for a very long time now, is get the evidence in place to allow you to do that. Because that's quite challenging, and we recognise that, we also think a SIL is appropriate, because that allows them, perhaps with less direct evidence, to take a tariff approach.
Right.
So there'll be two things working in tandem to try and draw down as much developer contribution as we can. But in any event, we do need the County Council to get further along than it is with its evidence, because that 200 million is not swallowable by the developers until it can be evidenced and linked back to individual schemes.
Councillor Harper Davis.
Thank you. I think as long as we've been councillors, or the longevity of the councillors around the table, it's very frustrating where we have to wait for people to live in their houses to actually get doctor surgery, to live in their houses, to have children, to have schools. Because what actually does, new development, it will be really helpful if we can get some infrastructure in place, which it can't because of triggers. Because the schools and the doctors are just at capacity. And when we have the new developments, we just don't, we have the transport infrastructure, but we don't have the domestic one. I think, you know, power on for Broadnook is proven about the grid. You know, there's not enough electricity for, you know, for the developments. There's not enough, the drains aren't big enough. So we just, somehow, we just need to get a hold of this, and this may well help us. My first question was, before we chatted about that, was really how long would this take to get the selling process, and obviously that would hold up the plan, so I really wondered if you had a time frame on that, please.
So, through your chair, the report sets out the time frame for preparing a formal SIL. It's essentially a year. We'll be trying to run quicker than that if we can. We are reliant on, to a degree, you know, support from the County Council and the evidence that they can bring to help us to develop that, it's called charging schedule, the rate that we're charging. So within a year, that's what's set out in the programme as it stands.
That's for the SIL element?
For the SIL.
Local plan?
For the local plan, summer 2025.
Thank you.
As I understand it, Richard, and correct me if I get this wrong, or Katie can, the inspector has asked us to check the viability of a SIL, not to put one in place, but just to check that it is, in principle, going to work. And if we can achieve that, then the inspector will let us progress.
Yes.
And if we do that, then we progress with the SIL as well. If not, all bets are off.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Needham. Sorry, I've got another question. So is there... In the meantime, I think you've kind of might have addressed it in the report, but I don't know if I fully understood it. In the interim between now and having this in place, are there any risks to development that comes forward in the meantime not getting contributions?
Well, in terms of the normal range of contributions that we will perhaps all be familiar with through a planning application process, no risk, that will just continue. What we're talking about here is the strategic transport contributions. This is where, when you take all of the sites together as one, the County Council says that will have a severe impact on the network in Charnwood at 2037. And I'm not just talking about highways, I'm talking about sustainable travel as well, bus movements as well. So so in the interim, it is entirely open to the County Council to make requests for contributions towards that strategic stuff. They've just got to frame their requests on planning applications in a way that meets the three tests in the Community Infrastructure Levy regulations.
Yeah.
And they are necessary to make the development acceptable in planning terms, directly related to development, and fairly and reasonably related in scale and kind to the development. They're the three tests that they've got to evidence. We think that they could probably do that. We think that they perhaps need some expert help to help them frame their formal comments in a way that those three tests are met.
Right, okay.
There is some issue in that some of the evidence that they've got around sustainable travel isn't complete yet. So the quicker they get that in place, the quicker they can start asking for that as well.
Yeah.
Phrase that another way, it's difficult to ask the developer to pay for something that you can't articulate.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I understand that now. So there is still the mechanism there to get those contributions.
Yes.
It just needs to be framed in the right way.
Absolutely. And the other thing to say is that we're not talking here about the normal transport stuff that we see on planning applications, like, you know, for example, you know, the site access or improvements to crossing points in and around the site or things like that. We're talking about big level stuff. You know, site in one location here making a contribution to a cycling and walking network in the whole of Charnwood. So it's a more ethereal thing, actually, and it's harder to evidence because of that.
Yeah. Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you.
Councillor Corey-Lowsey.
Thank you, Chair. I must have missed this. I've just gone back through the report to see if I could find where it was. There was talk at the start about an exemption for Southfields for the SIL.
Self-filled.
Never mind. I got the wrong end of the stick. I think we can all agree. Exemption for self-filled is very good. Thank you.
Have we got any other questions in the room? No? Councillor Taylor, is there anything else you want to add to that?
No, not for me, thank you.
Chief Exec.
Yeah, just wanted to make sure that committee is aware that there are disagreements between us and the County Council, and they have been very keen that we make sure that members are aware of their view and their difference of opinion to us. So if you do need any further information on that, I think we've covered a lot of it in the discussion, but there are a number of cabinet papers that they have published that you may want to read or look at if you're interested. But I do want to make it really clear that we have made that, you're aware that those are out there, and there are these differences of opinion about A, how we've got here and what we do in the meantime. So just to make sure, I'm happy to ask or respond to questions on that, but I think the county would probably feel it was remiss of me if I didn't mention it, as they've suggested we haven't been keeping members up to date.
Just on that note, because I have read a fair bit of this stuff, I think I understand where we're at with it, but is there any particular reason why the county has decided, you know, very recently as of this summer, that they want to do this now? Why? Because to me, it says in here that the legislation for a sale, it was introduced in 2008. So why are they only saying that we need this now? What?
So, through your chair, if I may, the Borough Council and the County Council have been working together on developing the transport delivery strategy, if you like, the infrastructure delivery strategy for transport, since the local plan was in its formative years. And it was always seen that we'd be securing contributions using Section 106 agreements in the usual way. Now, the local plan's taken more time to get through examination than we would like for a number of reasons. Set out in the report, and the County Council is obviously concerned to ensure that it starts requesting for these strategic level contributions as soon as it can. Now, given that we've been through hearing sessions now and dealing with all the transport stuff and viability stuff, there's no reason really why the County Council can't start using that evidence to support their requests on planning applications. So after the February hearings this year, they started doing that, and requests started coming in about May time, and we were happy to try and support those requests through the planning application process. The difficulty is that those requests have been formally challenged by the development industry, and the submission of legal advice in relation to the draft transport contribution strategy, which was published in July for consultation, have really sort of drawn sharp focus on the approach that the County Council would like to take, and we've not been able to support the requests in the form that they've been set out in their formal responses on planning applications in light of that that opinion that's been submitted to us. So we've said to the County Council, we can't support your requests in the format that you've already submitted them. Go away, recast them, and come back when you can demonstrate those three tests have been met. Now, unfortunately, the County Council refused to do that. So we were left with no alternative than to determine the planning applications without those requests, because they couldn't be supported. If we didn't do that, then we'd been subject to planning appeals, which we were advised we were very unlikely to win. Rather than working with us at that point in time, County Council decided to withdraw its transport contribution strategy. We thought they would consider the representations that have been submitted to it, go away and reform that transport contribution strategy, taking into account everything that the development industry was saying, and recast their position. But they haven't chosen to do that, and that's why we find ourselves in this difficult position. In order to ensure that we've got a mechanism that will work, to divert to community infrastructure levy instead, so we're managing the risk of preparing the local plan in that way.
Thank you.
Okay.
So that's why we find ourselves in the place we are.
Okay.
Councillor Harper-David.
Thank you. It's really more of a comment. So this protects us a little more, doesn't it? It's more protective as a borough council, and the development and making sure we can access the infrastructure that we really need. But Leicestershire County Council have always been such a difficult organisation to work with in every way, shape or form, and they just prove themselves each time. It's just very frustrating as a borough council.
Councillor Lenny, did you...
I was just going to say that I'm really glad I attended the planning training, because this just... I thought I might have missed something and I haven't. But yeah, I mean, there's only so far that diplomacy can go towards making an agreement, and I think Richard must have come to the end of his tether, to be honest. And I feel very sorry for everybody involved. But yeah, this has got to be done, because otherwise we won't have functioning planning department.
Thank you for those. What I would say is thanks to Richard, Carey and Katie and others in the team have worked for a very long time on this local plan, and we still hope and we'll still try to get it over the line. We do have some sympathy with the County Council in terms of what they're trying to do, but sometimes we do struggle to fathom the approach that's being taken. They will hopefully re-engage post the Cabinet decision, so they will not engage with us until Cabinet's formally said that we're taking a SIL, so they're currently not working with us at the moment, but we're hopeful that as of Friday, if Cabinet supports this resolution, they will begin working with us again, and then hopefully we can perhaps pass over this current set of issues we have with them and move forward more smoothly again. But they have, you know, there've been references to Richard directly in some of their reports, which I've not found to be in the best way of dealing with this. So I think we do need to at times be clear to the county that we do not accept some of their position or that agree with their views on things, while still working together collaboratively.
I'm sorry, it's really quick.
No, that's fine, go for it.
Has this affected any other districts' local plans? Or are they at different stages than us, so it hasn't had the same impact?
So, Chair, the districts are at different stages in the process. As set out in the County Council's report, either October or November Cabinet report, they have started talking to other districts about how they're going to work with them to deliver transport infrastructure, and the possibility of further community infrastructure levies around the clock face of Leicestershire. Mm-hmm. So that conversation is happening there.
Yeah.
There's a linked question to that, which cumulative impact is not new. It's not arrived suddenly with our new local plan.
No.
You know, from a planning point of view and from an infrastructure provider point of view, we have suggested to County Council they should talk to other County Councils. How are they dealing with cumulative impact? What have they done? The A5 as a corridor, you know, that has cumulative impact. So there are a group of authorities that work collectively on that, about, well, what does it need and how are we going to draw contributions from here, there and everywhere, across counties in some cases. So, you know, it is frustrating that we haven't got the mechanism yet to pull that wider contribution down and the evidence to support it. But I think we will get it. I think still is the right thing to do, yeah, given where we are, and we need to try now to move it forward and work with the county to that end.
Thank you.
I think we're all done with questions. Oh, Councillor Seaton.
My question was going to be on the other six authorities and their positions, but as you say, they're in different stages of doing it. The legal challenge, why is it always incumbent then on the district, not on the county? Because you said that we're open to a legal challenge. We are open to a legal challenge. So why wasn't it county open to a legal challenge on this? Or would that have been if they'd have carried on with theirs?
Through you, Chair. So, first of all, we haven't had a legal challenge. We've had a legal opinion.
A
legal opinion saying that the approach would be unlawful. So that legal challenge would be in the form of a judicial review, and that could be made either on any decision that the County Council makes, whatever that might be, or any decision that the Borough Council makes, whatever that might be. And usually it's a decision on a planning application, yes, that would lead to that judicial review. That's probably the most obvious and easiest way for a challenge to be made. I would expect, though, that development industry would look for an opportunity to challenge the county council in one way or another to directly see the county council in court, I suspect, to they'd be looking for that, as potentially as well as the borough council.
Yeah.
But as I understand it...
but obviously the county are aware of this.
I'm sure they're getting advice. Well,
yeah.
Okay.
Sorry,
just wanted to check. So that's the issue around the transport contribution strategy. Did you mean as well in terms of a planning application and appeal against an application? No. No, just... No. Okay.
Okay, I think we're done on that. I think we can conclude it's a very complex situation, but it feels like we're taking the right approach for us as a borough. Are we all in support of the recommendations from the report?
Thank you.
Okay, we move on to item 8. So we've got pre-decision scrutiny, the cabinet response. I'll go to Karen Widdowson.
Thank you, Chair. So this is the report setting out the cabinet's response to the last two decisions that were pre-scrutinised by scrutiny in November, related to the enterprise zone update and the exempt item related to disposal of and sale of 57 Bottle Acre Lane, Loughborough. And in both instances, the Cabinet adopted the officer recommendations as set out in the report, which the Commission supported. So this report is for noting. Thank you.
And then if we move to item 9, is scrutiny panels. If we can have an update on that, Karen.
Thank you, Chair. So we've got three panels underway at the moment. We've got the budget scrutiny panel, which had its meeting on the 10th of December. And those minutes will be available on the website shortly. We've got the flooding scrutiny panel underway and is due to meet again on the 14th of January 25. And finally, we've got the housing needs scrutiny panel, and which met on the 3rd of December. And again, those minutes will be up on the website shortly. So, and that's it for now. Anything, any questions or queries from members?
I have two of them, so.
Okay, Councillor Seaton.
Thank you. I just wondered what had happened with a workshop and a possible redesigning or rethought of a scrutiny commission.
Yeah.
Obviously, that I was under the impression that that was going ahead, and I think you were as well. Laurie, and it's not. So, yeah.
So the first query regarding the workshop. We need to, you know, for the new municipal year, which starts in May, we need to have ideas generated and a list of, you know, possible topics for scrutiny. So that would be better placed to have that in early 2025, so then that the panels can then start being established for the new municipal year. And then the other query you had was around, I think you're talking about early doors scrutiny. So there has been some research that's been undertaken.
Yeah, I spoke to Nick at the last training that we had.
And yeah. I'm feeding that back to the group leaders next week, actually. Mm-hmm. So we need to sort of have, well, potentially an outline of it, but I'm going to speak to Rob about the research that's been undertaken and where we go from there. So it's underway, but...
Okay. As regards to the workshop, I was under the impression it was going to be done in this municipal year, because obviously there's no panels now, really, is there?
There's one more panel that needs to... Yeah. We've got the other panel, which is going to be chaired by Councillor Reed, and which is the HMO's one.
Mm.
So there is that one to commence. But
then it'll be sort of nearly a whole year without.
Yeah, but we can only have... We've had four, four, and we can only have four at any one time, because we've actually only got four.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say four democratic services. We've actually gone down to three democratic services officers now. So, so four is very much at our limit, to be quite frank. So, but we've not forgotten about the other one, which Councillor Rhys Corey Lousley is going to chair that. But again, that comes down to the lead officer. Is Katie Moore, and she's actually quite heavily involved with the other scrutiny panel, so mm-hmm. you can't have it's about, it's basically about officer availability to go to.
Oh, I realise that, but the workshop didn't, we didn't sort of suggest panels and then the next day there were panels.
Yeah.
It didn't work like that. We suggested panels and then they fed in at the normal times, but we've always got panels to feed in.
Yeah.
Should we look at sort of February time?
Yeah, I think
to get the workshop in, get January out of the way. And then you're trying to get a date.
A lot of ideas ready for the next.
Because if we're not careful, we'll create a vacuum. Yeah. And then it'll go on to next year. And
yeah, no, I see what you mean. You keep the impetus going, basically.
Yes. Councillor,
This isn't like the workshop we had in 2023, is it? Where we had other people. That was really great. And I was wondering whether examples of some of the other authorities that were great could be illustrated to our councillors.
Yeah, I think we did that last time. We had examples drawn through from other councils. And the Centre for Governance and Scrutiny, they have lots of examples on their website that we
could
case studies, yes. And that's where we actually got our most of our information was from that website of how what other topics other councils had taken up. And
is that on our website?
Centre for Governance and Scrutiny.
Right.
CFSP. If you have a look on there, they've got lots of quite interesting topics. And also we have a scrutiny network as well, which is regional. And again, you hear what other councils nearby are doing.
Because I found that really helpful and quite exciting, really.
Yeah, good. Yeah, no, it's going to be basically a refresh of what is scrutiny about, and then actually getting a list of topics and also revisiting some of those topics, because there were some of the topics weren't, you know, they you can't do everything, so they were prioritised, and then not forgetting some of those other topics that were brought up.
Councillor Seaton? We've still got the tackling substance misuse, which we're going to have as training, aren't we? Not training, but we're going to have a
briefing session.
Briefing on
yes, it. We need to check where we are with that one, actually. Unfortunately,
because that could possibly be the next after HMOs.
Yeah, we can follow that up. So,
panel in waiting.
They have, the people involved have been spoken to, but we're just, it's just availability, basically, because obviously we've got to get police involved and and obviously Leeds, Nimmin Post, Gareth wasn't here long, and it's just to getting everyone together, basically.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. That's a good prompt for us.
Okay. Any other questions on panels? If we move on to item 10, so we've got the scrutiny work programme.
So this is the work programme for the Finance Performance Scrutiny Committee, which is in the appendix. If there's any changes or any amendments, there is something that I do need to let you know about. The Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee have been looking at the staff agency costs, and there's been a suggestion, the minutes haven't come out yet, but there is a suggestion from the last meeting that Scrutiny Commission look at that as a potential item, and we were thinking possibly March time, because it's a full financial year that potentially comes to the Scrutiny Commission.
Councillor Lenny?
Yeah, was that for one particular project in a department?
I think it's staffing agency costs across the council. That's my recollection. So, and having a look at, you know, which areas agencies have been used most and the costings involved.
Yeah, because part of that came up in the housing needs panel. That was a hefty cost.
So basically with the trends within the council where agency staff are being used, I think, you know, we can probably say it's housing and possibly planning, but we need to have the information.
Yeah.
So we thought if you are in agreement with that, we can add that to the work programme, which is on the next item.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would be why they're being used and what we are doing to address
it. Yeah, that's it. I mean,
not just telling us that it's happening.
We've known about it in some departments for quite a long time, and it's been a case of that there aren't people out there to fill those full-time positions, so they're having to take on agency staff to maintain the things that we're our statutory responsibilities, isn't it? It's it's
all trying to be people ourselves.
Yeah. So we'll see what it says.
Like we used to do.
So that's that. Any other questions? It's just for noting.
No. Thank you. So we move to item 11, the Scrutiny Commission Work Programme. So this is our work programme.
So this is Scrutiny Commission Work Programme, and we'll add to it what we've just discussed about the agency staff, and we'll get that for March. And then is there anything else that needs adding or any comments or suggestions?
The only thing we talked about was the sheltered accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd suggested
change 70.
It had come through in the briefing that we had just before this meeting. We talked a little bit about what you just mentioned, Brenda, about the early door scrutiny, and whether we could see a bit more on that sheltered accommodation, whether we could see a bit of that sooner. However, if it's coming on February and we're now basically at the end of December in terms of people working, we decided we probably couldn't have it any earlier. But I had suggested, depending on what comes of that particular meeting, that it might be helpful to ask if all ward councillors could have a briefing on that, so that people were clear about what the plans were with the sheltered accommodation, not least so they could be feed into the process, but also the more information that they had about what that programme might look like, they could perhaps provide reassurance to residents who may be concerned if they're living at the moment in sheltered accommodation, that's all of a sudden that might disappear. But if the ward councillors basically armed with a bit more information about what that might look like. But that might depend on what comes out of the actual meeting, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it would be like a post-meeting.
I think for me it would be improvements of communication to ward councillors.
That's why Councillor Needham said it, to try and get ahead and make sure that the ward councillors are.
Sometimes I just wonder what the point of being a councillor is, because nobody was stopping.
Yeah. If ward councillors are in sort of full possession of the facts, like you said, it's then it's easier to communicate that to residents, because we're often their first point of contact.
Well, no, I mean, if somebody rings me, if somebody rings me up and says they're homeless and domestic abuse and they've got three children that are special needs and they need this, that and the other, they could be, we'll go back to the car parking, absolutely lying through the teeth, because gullible councillor, she'll believe what I said and she can wave a magic wand. Well, of course we haven't got one. And that's how I always say to them, I haven't got one, you've got to go through the process. And the process next is to prove that they've got three children and all of this problem, and that's where they're falling down. Well, we can only get in touch with a housing officer and say what the resident has told us, and of course we're appalled, we think there should be that magic wand should be waved. What I would like is then the housing officer to come back to me and says she's lying. You know, that is not the case. I want to say she's lying, but to acknowledge
that they are addressing it,
that I have got in touch.
Yeah.
And we are addressing it, we do know all the details, all the information we want has been given to us and we're working through it. That's all I need.
I've had a couple of housing queries and I have had quite a good response back from officers, so it's maybe a bit mixed. Sometimes it's hitting the right officer.
But I
think it's a mixed response.
And even acknowledgement of an email.
Absolutely,
you've got your email, we'll be working through it.
I can possibly pick that up as to the corporate leadership team,
and that would stop me getting in touch with them again and again.
It stops
and then going to a higher level.
Follow it up all the time.
That's one of the departments with the largest number of agency staff as well, because they're wits end, aren't they? Although they've got the queue down a lot now.
So, anything else on the work programme?
trying to get back on track.
Nothing from me.
Sorry, Karen, what did you say?
Anything else on the work programme? There was. On page 77, we've got the list of key decisions there.
Would you like to have the corporate delivery plan for 25-26 add in as previous decision scrutiny? It's due to Cabinet in March. So, and it's something that, you know, have a good look through that, I think.
Yeah, we normally have that, so yeah. I think we should have that one.
FNP pick it up, though, with the KPIs?
It's normally, it's the new plan, so it's not checking on progress. It will be what the plan is for that year.
Yeah. So we'll add that one into the programme. So anything else to add in?
No, I don't think so. Councillor Taylor, is there anything that we've missed from your side? No. Thank you.
Would we not... A future of sheltered accommodation.
We've got the sheltered accommodation already.
We've got that already. Yeah. I think that was it. So thank you. So I've got, I can see lots of nodding, so we'll agree that.
Yeah. That's the end of the meeting. Thank you. Merry Christmas, everybody. We won't see you again till January.
That was it.
Oh, my God.